Okay. Good morning, everyone. We're on week three of difficult conversations. Today, by the way, also, we'll bring it in later to the discussion, but today is also in Hebrew calendar a very special day. It's the day of Lag BaOmer. Well known in Israel particularly, but outside of Israel as well, for nighttime celebrations last night with bonfires and festivities and so on. There's a number of reasons of why Lag BaOmer is a special day, but it's the yahrzeit of one of the great sages, the Kabbalistic sages, the author of the Zohar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and also to do with the disciples of Rabbi Akiva, which we'll talk about a bit later, because some of the aspects of Lag BaOmer actually, interestingly enough, become incredibly important to today's discussion, which we'll talk about. So we've been working on the concept of difficult conversation. I want to just quickly review so far where we're up to. We've defined what is a difficult conversation by saying that there's three kinds of difficult conversations. One is one that's a confrontation. There's already a conflict, there's anger, someone's lost their temper, there's a disagreement, and it's difficult to have the conversations. Then there's ones that are just difficult conversations, which means you haven't had any confrontation, but you're worried that it might lead to a confrontation, like, I don't know, firing a client or an employee, or asking for a raise, or these kind of things. And then there's ones that are just awkward, which are difficult conversations to have because you're not sure what to say, you don't know how to comfort someone in times of difficulty, in times of grief, and so on and so forth. So that's the three categories. Now, we're also established 2 weeks ago that there's three foundations of every conversation, whatever conversation it is, and that is that we shouldn't avoid them. We're going to have them, the difficult conversations, one time or another. We need to ensure, number two, that it's human conversation. By definition, we explained at length, that means talking in a way that it enters the world of the other, and it's not just signal sending of my own reality. And that it's preceded by humility, putting away the ego, and also a thought process where we think through things before we say, which is the formula that we established of Yaakov, Leah and Rachel. Yaakov being married to Leah and Rachel, the concept of Yaakov being humility, Leah being the world of thought, Kabbalistically, and Rachel being the world of communication. That's how the formula goes. Now, last week we talked about a critical concept, which is a general idea as well, about timing a conversation. Timing of the conversation is incredibly important. And we said it's important for two reasons. First of all, timing is important because depending on the timing of the conversation will depend if it's going to be effective, meaning is it going to enter the world of the other person or just me signal sending? So if I say something to someone, it might be the effective thing to say, but it's the wrong time. Like we gave the example from the Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot, last week, that if someone is angry, it's not the time to talk to them. You might need to have a conversation, but not now. So it's ineffective because it's the wrong time. So that's in terms of the person we're talking to, but it's equally important for the person who is talking, not just for the person who is talking to, because it gives us a time. Sometimes we have to experience that huge pause so that we can take time to process and to go through what we have to say. We talked about this idea of going to the balcony, meaning going out, withdrawing, processing, giving time to process and to work through our thoughts and our strategy. Because quick responses normally come from emotions, natural instincts and impulses, which are often very egocentric and off course. So it gives us time to think about what our interests are, what our alternatives are, what our goals are. Just the timing is very important, not to wait until we respond. Okay. So that's a quick review of what we have to do so far. Now today, what I want to do is, I want to focus specifically on the first conversation, those that are conversations that where there's already conflict and you want to try and resolve that conflict or at least diffuse the situation. Now, what we're going to say today is really bullet points because obviously this needs a lot of thought, a lot of discussion, but these are some of the highlights and some of the key ingredients that we need to bear in mind. So let's give an example. Someone has just lost their temper with you, right? someone just completely lost it and just said a whole bunch of hurtful and inappropriate things, and there's tension and there's conflict. Or there's a disagreement between two people on strategy, disagreement between people in the office, spouses, siblings, friends, of how to handle a situation, and you can see that the tension is rising because the opinions are getting very strong. They seem to have a very, very strong view. Each one has a strong view, and there's beginning to be a conflict. A couple gets into a big argument that, if it's not diffused, will just derail completely. Sometimes there's a conflict where there's actually not obvious tension. In other words, there's conflict where someone has said something, or someone has hurt someone, or someone is upset with someone, so there becomes a phase of silent treatment, which can be as bad as a terrible conflict, right? Where people just not talking. Two people are locked into, you can have two people in conflict, locked into a situation where they're just not talking to each other, they're not communicating with each other, they're avoiding each other, and it's unhealthy, and it's a time bomb waiting to just to explode sometime, right? And we know that the conversation has to be had, it is necessary, but having it in the wrong way will just completely derail the whole thing. You know, it's interesting that this week's parsha, every week we have a Torah portion that we read in shul. This week the Torah portion is called the Parashat Emor. It's called Emor because it's one of the first words of the parsha where God tells Moses to communicate something to the Jewish people, one of the commandments, but it uses the phrase Emor. Now we know in Hebrew, right? In Hebrew, there's different words, and we've mentioned this before, there's different words that are used for conversation or communication. Like dibur is a very common one, by daber Hashem. Speech is called dibur, ledaber is to talk, is to speak. And then sometimes we have this word that we have in this week's parasha called emor. Emor means to say. And they tell us that the difference between dibur and emor, and they're both necessary depending on the context, is that dibur is much more structured, harsh type speech. Right? The type of speech that you use when you're giving an instruction and you're assertive and something that you need to communicate properly. Right? So that it's clear and that everyone knows what you're talking about. But the word of amira, emor, is more this concept of being soft spoken, soft speech. So one of the concepts we pick up from this week's parsha is the concept of emor. Emor means that sometimes communication is necessary. We have to have a conversation, but we have to work out and learn how to do it appropriately so that it's not harsh, it's not driven by conflict, it doesn't inflame the conflict, doesn't enhance the conflict, but it's soft and it's spoken properly so that it diffuses the situation and resolves rather than making it worse. The sages tell us in the Talmud that the divrei chachamim b'nachat nishmaim, which means the words of the wise are always heard calmly. Now, people that scream and shout are not, it's not a wise thing to do because it doesn't achieve anything. Okay, now how do we do that? So I'm going to share with you a concept which I'll develop a little bit, but it's a concept which comes from a book called Difficult Conversations. Appropriate book for the course. It's written by three authors, Stone, Patton, and Heen. Not sure who they are, but... And they say the following. They say that every conversation, every difficult conversation, particularly conversations of conflict, every conversation has actually three conversations going on at the same time. That's an important idea to unravel and to unpack, so that we're aware of what we're doing when we have a difficult conversation. Right? The first is the what happened conversation. The what happened conversation is not what we're talking about now, but it's more what we bring to the conversation. Right? The assumptions, the background knowledge, the intentions, the context, the circumstances, the experiences that brought us to the point of having the conversation. And when you have that conversation, what we often don't realize is when we're talking not what we're saying, we're talking what happened. We're bringing to the conversation background knowledge, which we have to look and analyze if it's actually the accurate background knowledge, and we're going to talk about that in a second. The second part of the conversation is what they call the feelings conversation. It's how we communicate or don't communicate our feelings about the experience, our feelings about the situation of what is actually going on. Right? So we're talking, we're trying to resolve something, we're expressing something to someone else, frustration, hurt, ideas, creativity, whatever the case is, we're bringing to the table background information, and we're also expressing our feelings, or maybe not expressing our feelings as we should be doing, and that's another part of the conversation. And thirdly, there's another part of the conversation called the identity conversation. See, what very, very much influences our conversations is how we perceive ourselves in terms of if we're going to be right or wrong, if we're going to win or lose the argument, or we're going to be right, or we're going to be successful, not successful, and how that defines us, what it does to our identity. And that very much drives part of the conversation. Right? So there's three strong components playing into the one conversation, which they call the three conversations. And what we need to try and do is to try and understand what normally happens in these kind of situations, how we normally conduct these three conversations, and how we should be conducting these three conversations. And that's the key to the difficult conversation in times of conflict.
Can I ask you one
sure.
thing? Sure. If someone says to you, whatever I say, I know I'm right, because otherwise I don't say it, I'm always right. Why do you have a conversation?
You don't. Send them the CD of today. No. Well, that's exactly what we're about to talk about. Because there's no such thing. You can't always be right.
No, I realize that.
Well, there's not always one right.
The receiving end is.
Now, the receiving end. Something I always say is the following: What we shouldn't do. Put it that way, right? And that's a very good, very valid question you're asking. What we shouldn't do in situations like that is we shouldn't inflame the situation more, right? Because it's what they call the dance of anger, right? The dance of anger means when someone says something to you that's really ridiculous and gets you really upset, so we respond by being equally ridiculous, equally upset, and then it just makes it worse and becomes a cycle of anger, right? So although that's incredibly confronting and incredibly annoying for someone to say to us, I'm always right, otherwise I wouldn't say it,
Yeah. We
need to learn how to stand our ground and respond as we need to respond. Because the chances are that with doing that enough times and not taking the bait and derailing ourselves into becoming the same way, eventually I'll get the message, we'll chip away a little bit and they'll kind of come down a little bit, hopefully. It doesn't always work, but we need to try. We can only, as I always said from the Kotzke Rebbe, that he said, you can only change ourselves. You know, if you want to influence others, you can only change ourselves. That's what we've got to work on. Sometimes you've got to walk away. Sometimes you've just got to walk away from a conversation because there's no point. There's no point trying to convince someone that you're right if someone always thinks they're right. I mean, it depends on the situation. So obviously, I don't know the background, but I'm saying, so we need to be careful with that. Because it is one of the hardest things to actually develop. You see, let's talk about the first conversation. First conversation is where we really need the balcony. We really need to take time off and to think it through. Why? Because, you know, we all know the cliches, right? We can all repeat the cliches. We can all say, you know, there's two sides to every story. Who doesn't know that line, right? Or everyone is entitled to an opinion. We all know that. But the question is, do we really mean it? Right? Do we really, really mean that? Okay. One of the most hardest things to accept, but one of the most important things to accept, is that there are two sides to every story, that there are different background information to every situation, right? Because I think I've shared this with you before, but there's an amazing saying from the sages, which seems very simple, but it's got a lot of depth to it. And the sages say that when God created the human being, just like every physical face looks different, there are not two people in the world that look alike, even identical twins have some identity differences. Might be difficult sometimes, but for the most part, everyone looks different. So too are everyone's views different. Right? That's what the sages tell us. Now, that's a simple statement, but the depth of the statement is as follows. The commentaries ask a question, why is it important to preface it with that first part? What do you mean? What's the just like the faces are different, so too the opinions are different? What do we need that first part for? I mean, everyone knows everyone looks different. I mean, that we understand. What's the connection between thinking different to looking different?
Perception.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But why do we have to link those two concepts together? And one of the ideas is like this. The reason that the sages link in the difference how people look is as follows. Because if any normal human being would be asked, do you think it's a good idea that everyone looks different? The obvious answer would be yes, unless you're crazy. Right? It would be very difficult to live in a world that everyone looks the same, right? So it's a fact of life that we not only accept fully, but we agree with, we welcome it, we live with it. It's the only way we can live. So it's a complete, embedded, normal, accepted fact of life that everyone looks different. So the sages say, let's link those two things together. Just as it's a completely accepted fact of life that everyone thinks that everyone looks differently, so too it needs to be as accepted and as normal and as celebrated that everyone thinks differently. Right? And everyone thinks differently means that it's not that one is right and one is wrong, is that there are different ways of looking at the same thing. Now, of course, we have a code of right and wrong, and sometimes people are wrong, sometimes we're wrong. But that's not the point. The point is that very, very often it's not about right or wrong. It's about looking at a situation from a different perspective. It's about coming to a situation of conflict that everyone is coming from a totally different understanding. And that's their reality. Everyone in the conversation or everyone in the conflict has a different reality, and that reality is real. That's why it's called reality. Because they really don't know what you're talking about. They don't know what you want. Because they're looking at it from a completely different point of view. And that's a very hard thing to come to. Why such a hard thing to come to? It's a very hard thing for us to take on board. It's a very hard thing when you... It's very simple, because since we're so convinced and so passionate about what we're thinking, which is, by the way, a good thing. We should be passionate about our views. We should have conviction. We should be strong. We always think that if we think there's a different point of view that's equally as valid as ours, it becomes a weakness and not a strength. Where it's totally the opposite. It's totally the opposite. If there's no greater strength than understanding there's more than one view. And let me share this with you from a concept that we found in the Torah. Beautiful idea. In the Torah there's a mitzvah called Machatzita Shekel. The half a shekel. It needed to be given every year. It was like a yearly temple tax that was given. It was called half a shekel. Now when the Torah tells us to give the half a shekel, it has a very interesting phraseology, very interesting language that it uses. It says the following. It says, God spoke to Moses, speak to the Jewish people, tell them they have to give this half a shekel every single year. And what is half a shekel? Half a shekel was a currency. That a complete shekel, says the Torah, was 20 gera. 20 gera. Whatever that currency was in temple times. Right? Which then the Torah specifies, that means that half a shekel is 10 gera. Right? Now, the commentaries ask the question, why was it so important for God to tell the Jewish people that, by the way, a shekel is 20 gera, half a shekel is 10 gera? I mean, it's not a currency lesson. Everyone knew what a half a shekel was. All that God needed to do was tell them that they got to give half a shekel. Half a shekel was a standard currency in those times. Right? So why is it so important to spell out how the half a shekel actually worked? What's the significance? Who cares how many gera a shekel is? Right? Like saying to someone, you've got to give a dollar. And by the way, a dollar is 100 cents. Who cares? A dollar is a dollar. Right? But there's something very, very deep in this. Part of the mitzvah of half a shekel is for a person to learn humility. Why do we give half a shekel? In fact, it was an interesting mitzvah. It was one of the taxes, you know, when it comes to charity, for example, regular charity in the Torah, we are taught each one has to give according to their own means. Right? A person who's not well off, everyone has to give charity, but a person should give within their means. As someone who doesn't have a lot of financial resources and gives too much, it's considered incorrect. Someone who has and gives too little, it's also incorrect, because each one has to give according to what they can. With one exception, when it came to the half a shekel, it was a standard thing. Everyone had to give a half a shekel. The poor wasn't allowed to give less, the rich weren't allowed to give more. This was a mitzvah of giving half the shekel. Why? Because the half a shekel is very fundamental. Half a shekel is this concept of a person giving something to demonstrate and to acknowledge that we are incomplete, we are half. We are not the whole thing. We're half because without God we're incomplete. Without another person we're incomplete. Every person is an incomplete soul. We're not complete. We only become complete by connecting to something else. We only become complete by connecting to other people, by connecting to a higher reality, by connecting to God and so on and so forth, which is the concept of the half a shekel. However, says God, I want you to understand something. The term half a shekel right? Half represents incompleteness. But interestingly enough, that very half a shekel equals 10 gerah. And 10, we know, is a sign of completeness. Because we know that a person is governed, as we've said so many times, by 10 powers. There's 10 powers of the soul. If someone is able to develop properly their 10 powers of their soul, if someone is able to express their chokhmah, bina, da'at, their intellectual faculties, to work through every one of the 7 emotions and to make sure they're all functioning properly, that's a sign of tremendous completeness. If someone can reach a level of number 10, reaching the 10, the number 10 is a sign of perfection, it's a sign of completeness. Says God, you want to reach perfection? You want to be strong? You want to have strength? You want your personality to be strong? You have to be half. Understanding there's another reality outside of yours doesn't diminish your reality, it increases your perfection. And that's why it's so specified. Understand, says God, the mitzvah is about giving half a shekel, because the half a shekel is what brings you completeness. The half a shekel is what helps you express every one of your 10 powers. If you understand that you are incomplete, that's when you can reach the level of 10. That's when you can use every part of your personality appropriately and properly. Because you can't do it on your own. You need to connect to something else. So that, and that's the struggle that us human beings always have. That's why some people can't apologize, because they think it's a weakness. They can't agree with someone else, because they think it's a weakness. Often people have to fight and put down other causes because they think it enhances and strengthens their cause. I think it was Rabbi Shlomo Salanter, a great master of ethics, who said that there's two ways to be higher than someone else. One is to get on a chair and be higher than the other person. The other one is to put the other person down. And unfortunately, people take that second path a lot of times. Why? It doesn't make you stronger, it makes the other person weaker, that's all. But the truth is that to be humble enough to think that I have an opinion, and I'm passionate about that opinion, and I understand my circumstance, I understand the background, that's the way I see it, and that's the way I believe it is, but there is another equally important and legitimate and valid view that's not wrong and I'm right, but it's just different. That's an amazing strength. It's an amazing strength. It's an amazing strength to do that. That's what we have to practice. It's understanding, and we're going to specify some examples in a minute, but it's understanding what we bring in terms of a conversation. That when you come to a conversation, a difficult conversation, a conversation of conflict, you are bringing different background information than the other person is. Completely different background. You saw the situation, you saw the story a particular way, but you need to explore how perhaps it could be explored differently. Don't go in there with a bulldozer and say, this is what it is, this is the situation, because what you're bringing, it's the same conversation. We're talking the same words. We're talking about the same thing that happened, but the background is completely different. We're gonna break it down in a few minutes, exactly what that means. You know, as I mentioned at the beginning, today's a very special day in the Jewish calendar, the day of Lag BaOmer. And this concept really goes to the heart of one of the aspects of Lag BaOmer. Just to give you a bit of background. It goes to the heart of what respect is. You know, respect, we talked about it a while ago. How respect is the foundation of all relationships. So the story of Lag BaOmer, one of the stories of Lag BaOmer goes as follows. That the great sage Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. Right? And what he did was, Rabbi Akiva was a great man. He only started studying when he was 40. He didn't even know the Jewish alphabet. Right? It's an amazing story of determination and how a person can achieve things even later on in life and so on and so forth. And he rose to become one of the greatest Jewish sages and teachers of Torah, and he got this amazing group of 24,000 students. And unfortunately, all those 24,000 students, with the exception of 5, died in a very short period of time with a terrible, tragic epidemic. They died during this time of the Omer. That's why it's a time of mini, mini mourning. We don't have weddings during this time and so on and so forth. And Lag BaOmer, the decree was annulled and they stopped dying, and that's why Lag BaOmer has there are other aspects of Lag BaOmer, but it's one of the concepts behind this day where they didn't die on this day. Why did they die? So the sages tell us a terrible thing. They died during this period. They were punished because they were great men, and therefore great men are often judged more harshly. And they died because lo nahagu kavod ze laze. They didn't respect each other. What does that mean, they didn't respect each other? The question is a tremendous question, because I think we've mentioned this previously, but because it strange that particularly the students of Rabbi Akiva didn't respect each other. Who was Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva was the author of the great and famous statement where he quoted the Torah and he said, "V'ahavta l'recha kamocha," I love your neighbor as yourself. And he said, "Ze klal gadol b'Torah." This is the one of the greatest rules in the Torah. Upon this stands so much of our teachings. Rabbi Akiva was a teacher. He was an advocate. He was a person who promoted this concept of love for another person. And yet, dafke, his talmidim, his students, should be the ones that didn't respect each other. How could that be? And one of the explanations that's given is as follows: that they did love each other, but they didn't respect each other. What does that mean? You see, Rabbi Akiva taught. He taught a certain message. He taught many, many things. He gave guidance. He established a certain way of living. But often a teacher teaches many, many students, and each student is dedicated and committed to understanding what the teacher says. And yet, because people are different, as we just said before, everyone understands it a bit differently. And everyone expresses it a bit differently. Not wrong necessarily, but all within the same guidelines, but in a bit of a different way. Especially with Jews, you know, that's what happens. We all see things very, very differently. So the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were all students of the same teacher, yet they each had a different style, a different method of how they were absorbed and how they lived the teachings of their master. And they were so dedicated to their master, and they were so dedicated to each other, and each one held their own individual view with such conviction that they set out on a mission to try and convince the other. But the convincing the other was lacking one aspect. It was lacking the recognition that, hold on a second, maybe I'm not the only right one. Maybe there are two ways, or three ways, or more ways to understand the same teachings of Rabbi Akiva. We're all committed to the same goal here. So maybe there are different ways of understanding it. So when Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, or Akiva's disciples, would try and convince each other of their viewpoint, they did it out of love. But when you have a love that's not based on respect, it becomes aggressive. It becomes undermining. Because it becomes self-centered. The love becomes a self-centered thing rather than a selfless thing. When you love someone, love, we talked about this once before, love is a very me emotion. And it should be, because when you love someone, you want to be there. No one wants to be loved by no one, right? You don't want to be loved by nobody. You want to be loved by someone. So the someone has to be very present. The problem is that love can therefore become very quickly a very, very self-promoting, self-centered emotion. A pleasure-seeking emotion. Because it's very much about the person loving. So love that's not based on respect becomes selfish love rather than selfless love. I'm saying this quickly because we once talked about this in great length. But respect means to understand that there's another reality to mind, that there could be another way of looking at the same thing, that there are two sides to every story. There are different ways of looking at the same thing. And that's very, very hard to try and achieve, but yet so critical and a foundation of a difficult conversation. We cannot bulldoze ourselves into a conversation if we want it to work, if we want it to resolve something, if we want it to achieve something, if we want it to diffuse something, a situation. If we go in there only with one set of background information, it's not going to work. We know it's not going to work because the other person sees it differently. Therefore, there has to be that element of respect. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how contentious it is, no matter how hurt we are, there's always got to be this thing, hold on a second, let me explore the other view. I'll share with you two cute stories. I saw a story in that book, Difficult Conversations. He says, talks about a guy that took his nephew, 4-year-old nephew, to a parade, some sort of sports parade or something. It's very amazing. There's so many different amazing people and celebrities and all kinds of amazing people. And there were, you know, a parade has floats, and there were these beautiful floats, and each float was on a truck, and they were, the artwork and the creativity was absolutely amazing. Right. So as they left the parade, the little nephew, the little 4-year-old, turns to his uncle. He says, "That's the best truck parade I've ever seen." That's all he saw. They were both at the same parade. The uncle understood a bit more. He understood the greatness of the people he'd seen, the creativity, the artwork. The truck was completely insignificant. He didn't even see the truck. The truck was just there to carry the floats. And the little kid turns to his uncle and says, "That's the best truck parade I've ever seen." And he really meant it. That's what he thought it was. He thought he got taken to a truck parade. He thought it was fantastic. It's probably matched his little matchbox trucks that he bought in the store. And he thought, what a wonderful parade. I've had so many times people come to me who are in conflict and they completely see things differently. Where someone says, you know, I want to be supported more. And the other person says, but I'm trying. And they really are trying, but it's not enough for the person who... they're just seeing it completely differently. And it's the same thing they're talking about. They're not even agreeing on the... they're not even disagreeing on the facts. Something happened yesterday. This is what happened. The other person says, well, it wasn't nearly enough. The other person says, but it was progress. And they both mean it. Just no one understands where the other person is coming from. No one's trying to understand where the other person is coming from. You know, being right. I saw a story of two clerics that were arguing about how to do God's work. Right. So they were trying to diffuse it, not have a conversation of real conflict. So in a spirit of conciliation, the one finally says to the other following. He says, you know what? You and I just see things differently, and that's okay. He said, we don't need to agree. You can do God's work your way, and I'll do God's work his way. It's like that fridge magnet I always tell you about. Everyone's entitled to my opinion. So let's understand how this works. So again, every conversation has three conversations, right? There's the what happened conversation, there's the feelings conversation, and then there's the identity conversation, as we said before. So let's talk about the what happened conversation. So I'm going to share with you the way it's done in that book. I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, it's pretty clear. Okay. So there's, first of all, which conversation are we happening? So we're talking about the what happened conversation, as you can see down on the left, right? The challenge is that we're talking about a situation of conflict, which you want to have a conversation about, and it's just more complex than any of us think about it. Right? Everyone can see the situation, but there's a lot more background than any of us see on the surface. So I'll tell you the way they put it. There's what we call a battle of messages and a learning conversation. A battle of messages is a conversation that doesn't work. It's just a war. I say, you say, you say, I say. And a learning conversation is what we try and do that should be effective. So here's one assumption, right? The assumption is I know all I need to know to understand what happened. So you go into a conversation and you're confident that you know what happened. You know exactly what happened. You know what brought it. You know what happened. And that's what you go into the conversation with. And therefore, that's your assumption. And therefore, your goal becomes persuade them that I'm right. Right? How often do we go into a conversation persuading the other person that we're right? That's our goal. That's our complete goal. To persuade the other person that you're right. Now, there are times in life where these conversations are important, right? It's not a one-size-fits-all here. There are conversations where the goal to persuade someone else is a legitimate goal. If you really believe in a value and you want to impart and inspire the people and make other people aware of something, or you're a salesman, or you're a parent, where your responsibility is to teach children values, then yeah, there's ways to have effective conversations where you can persuade people. But here we're talking about a conversation of conflict where two people are in conflict with each other, seeing things differently. If you walk into that conversation assuming that you know everything there is to know and all you want to do is to persuade them that you're right, it's not going to work. Because there'll never be a resolution from it. So we shift into what we call the learning conversation, right? And the learning conversation means that we start with a different assumption. And this is a hard assumption to start with. We start with an assumption that there are things we both don't know. We each bring different information and perceptions. Have that realization that we're only half a shekel. That we see things differently. Just like people look differently, they think, see things differently. It's different. It's completely different. And I know that I understand what happened to me. I know the background to the situation, the way I see it. But I understand there might be many, many different ways of seeing it. And to walk into a conversation, therefore, with a different goal, right? It's a different assumption and a different goal. The goal would be to let's explore each other's stories. It's a little bit like Stephen Covey said, seek to understand and then be understood. In other words, to understand the viewpoint of the other person, right? Now, the challenge over here is like this, and it goes back to what I said before about strength and weakness. The reason it's a strength and not a weakness, we're often afraid of this because we're afraid that we might see it their way, right? What happens if I actually think they're right? So number one, so what? So we're allowed to be wrong. People aren't perfect. But number two, it's not about agreeing with the other person. This is often the whole problem with these conversations. That people think if they go into conversation exploring the viewpoint of the other person, that it means that I must be wrong then. I don't want to be wrong, I want to be right. It doesn't mean that I have to agree with it. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means I have to understand it. Very different. Very, very different. Very hard. Recently I had a conversation with someone who was in a came to me for advice, and he was in that kind of conflict relationship situation where what the other person was doing was totally outrageous. And the truth is, he might even be right. Maybe it was outrageous. But I said, if you spend time understanding why the other person is doing that. He said, what do you mean? Why should I spend time? It's ridiculous what they're doing. And it took me, I couldn't get past baseball. It was terrible. I was going round and round in a circle. I said, you're not going to win. You're not going to succeed. This is going to derail. This is going to destroy the relationship. I said, if you want to be able to share your feelings, you have to take time out and understand the perspective of the other person. How mistaken you think it might be, you have to understand it. You have to understand where that person is coming from. Otherwise, you can't have a conversation. It will be an animal conversation where you'll be sending a lot of signals, but you will not be entering the world of the other person because the person will not know what you're talking about because they see the whole thing differently. And therefore, the worst thing that can happen to a person is to feel not understood. So therefore, all you're going to do is you're going to validate that person's feelings and resentment and upsetness that you just don't understand them and you're being too hard on them. So by keep on repeating your viewpoint and how ridiculous you think what the other person is doing is happening, all you're going to do is reinforce the conflict, not diffuse the conflict, not resolve the conflict. So therefore, we have to have a conversation, and the conversation has to include the exploration of the view. I just want to explain to you, I need to have this conversation with you because I was really upset and something is bothering you, but I understand that you might see it differently. Come, can you help me? Can you explain to me how you see it? Can you explain to me where you're coming from? And you might want to then take time off and say, let me think about it. You might want to come back and say, I understand, if you really truly do understand, but I still don't agree with you. So either we need to agree or disagree, or we need to work it out, whatever the case is, but it's respect, it's understanding, it's exploring the background. Most people don't have conversations like this, but it's very difficult to have, but it's an amazing way of doing it. Still staying on the same conversation, on the what happened conversation, another part about it is like this, right? Intention. We have a situation, we have a conflict, but then there's the issue of what was the intention behind what you said? So you said something to me, what did you mean, right? Did you mean to hurt me? Did you mean to go in competition to me? Did you mean to undermine me? So we go into a conversation where we assume that the assumption is, if you look at it on the left, that I know what they intended. And therefore, what's the obvious goal? If you know what they intended, what's the goal? You need to let them know how wrong it was, right? Which of course won't work. The learning conversation, the effective way of having the conversation is different. It's I know what I intended, I know what I intended. You can't know what the other person intended, you don't know that. I know what I intended that brought us to this situation, and I know that the impact it had on me, right? But I don't know what's in their head. You can't know. You can know what someone did to you. You can know what someone said to you, but you cannot know what they meant. You cannot know what they intended. In the prayers of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we call God a Yodea Machashavot. God is the knower of all thoughts. That's God. But human beings don't know other people's thoughts, generally speaking. So therefore, how can you know? You don't know. You don't know the background. You don't know what they meant. You don't know what they thought happened and therefore brought them to say a thing like that. You don't know their intention. And therefore, if you assume that you don't know what they were thinking, all you can do, your goal becomes very different. Your goal becomes to share my impact with them and find out what they're thinking. Find out. Ask them, look, there's no dispute of what happened, but what did you mean? Like, I'm sure you didn't mean to hurt me, so what did you mean? Sure, you didn't mean to scream at me. I mean, you never scream at me that way. So why would you say those hurtful things? You couldn't have meant them. What did you mean? Or why did you say them? Very different conversation. Right? Or there's a concept of blame. Something goes wrong and we have a conflict. Right? So a battle of messages, a bad conversation, starts off with an assumption that it's all their fault. So you blame someone. And therefore the goal of the conversation is to get them to admit blame. I'd like to know the last person who ever got someone else to admit that they were wrong. You're very clever if you did. Especially when you blame them. Yeah. Most people become defensive. Especially when they see you on edge. If you go into a conversation assuming that it's their fault, and therefore your goal is to get them to admit blame, you're guaranteed that it's not going to work. 99.9% of the time. In any counseling situation, in any marriage situation, in any, no matter, you know, it can be sometimes a relationship issue where there's a whole situation, a whole conflict, and a whole degeneration of the relationship, and it is very possible that it's mostly one person's fault. Very, very possible. I'm not talking about extreme cases of abuse and all that. That's a whole different story. But I'm talking about regular conflict, regular dissatisfaction, or regular stuff, right? It could even be one person is 90% wrong. But that doesn't mean every person is always wrong. Even if they are wrong, in other words, even if they are to blame, it doesn't mean that they're all to blame. Right? So therefore, a good conversation is going into the conversation but that with an assumption that we both contributed. And to understand our contributions. It's a very different conversation. When you go into a conversation and say, look, I'm sure this is partly my fault. You know, you didn't get this project done on time, if it's a work situation, or, you know, I assumed you were going to help me with this thing, and you said you would, but you didn't, and maybe I need to understand, like, why didn't, maybe it's my fault, maybe it wasn't clear enough, maybe I didn't ask you enough, maybe I wasn't clear what I needed, maybe the expectations weren't clear enough. Let me try and understand what contributed to this. You get a very, very different outcome. The person will say, well, you actually weren't very clear, but, you know, maybe I wouldn't pick up, I should have, and you got a much, much better chance. People are generally pretty defensive, but you've got a much better chance of people admitting or at least acknowledging their contribution is if you admit your contribution. Right? So that's the what happened conversation. Let's just go back a second, just crystallize these three things. So first of all, it's about knowing the background. So we don't know what we don't always know what happened. And therefore, the first part of an effective conversation in terms of the what happened conversation level is to explore each other's stories. The second thing is, you don't know the intention, so all you can do is share the impact that had on you and find out how it's coming from their point of view. And blame, understand that we always both contribute to a problem. And therefore acknowledge that and understand both our contributions so that we can reconcile, we can understand each other. It's a very, very different conversation. That's the what happened part of the conversation. Right? Then we go to the next part, the feeling conversation. Now, the feeling conversation is like this. First of all, before we get to the table, first of all, to understand every conflict, every conversation that is resolving a conflict or dealing with a conflict or dealing with a tight, tense sort of situation is always, it's never only to do with a situation. It's never only to do with a fact. It's got everything to do with the way I feel. It's got everything to do with our emotions. So, it's understanding. The challenge is that conflict-type conversations are always emotionally charged. And what happens is the conversation, therefore, comes straight out of our emotions. Where conversations should never come from emotions. Good conversations. The origin of a conversation should include emotion. That's what we're going to talk about in a second. Right? A good conversation includes emotions, but a good conversation doesn't originate in emotions. People that say what they feel without thinking have bad conversations, generally speaking. Conversations, as we said, talked about the first week, have to have the Yaakov, Leah, Rachel formula. They have to have the thought before the speech. They have to have the humility before the speech. It's got to come from the head. It needs to be thought out. So therefore, a conversation that comes straight from the feelings is very explosive and doesn't deal with the history, with the facts on the ground. It deals more with the emotions. Right? We talk facts. We talk about what happened, but really what we're talking is our emotions. Okay. So what happens is like this. If we don't do it right, so we do one of two things. Either we ignore our feelings. This becomes the complicated part. Either we ignore our feelings. We say feelings are irrelevant and it wouldn't be helpful to share. So I'm actually not going to tell you how upset I am. I'm just going to deal with the facts. Right? Like maybe I'm scared of sharing my feelings. I don't want you to know how angry I am, how upset I am, how hurt I am. So I'm just going to deal with the facts. Or the other way around. I'm really hurt. I have a lot of feelings. I have a lot of emotions. It's all your fault, and you need to hear about it. You need to know what you've done. You need to know how upset I am. You need to know how angry I am. You need to know how irritated I am and frustrated I am. Right? So what's the goal in that kind of conversation? Either you avoid talking about it completely, or you let them have it. Right? Full blown. None of which work. Why none of which work? Obviously, letting him have it completely never works. So that just becomes explosive. But avoiding feelings is also not right. I've quoted you many, many times what the Torah tells us. You should not hate your brother in your heart. That if there's a real problem and it lingers on and you cannot get rid of it, you have to share it. Because you cannot carry emotions in your heart, because emotion, we are people. People connect on an emotional level. And a lot of the story, if we're in a conflict situation, there's no doubt that it's not only to do with history and facts. There's no doubt that it has a lot to do with emotions. And therefore, if we don't deal with the conversation on the emotional level, it will be an incomplete process. And therefore, we need to talk about the respect. We need to talk about what we're feeling. We need to talk about emotions. But it needs to be done effectively. That's the problem. If we avoid emotions, eventually it will explode. If we talk about them without thinking, without steering them, without guiding them, it'll be explosive. It'll be destructive. So therefore, if we have what's called a learning conversation, a good conversation, we say the assumption is that we go into it with a very different assumption. Number one, we assume that feelings are the heart of the situation. They are very complex. I might even not know what I'm feeling. In other words, first of all, we need to reflect. Sometimes we just jump into a situation because we think we know what we're feeling. We think we're angry because this and this. And actually, if we think about it, maybe it's not this, something else. Maybe I'm bringing other stuff to the table. Maybe I screamed at someone because I had a bad day yesterday at the office. And therefore, I screamed at my spouse or my children, whatever the case is. So I need to get in touch with my own feelings first and understand what is it that I'm feeling, first of all. I need to address feelings, but address them in an appropriate, constructive way. And therefore, the goal becomes very different. The goal becomes, we need to address the feelings, mine and theirs, or his typo there, without judgments, without attributing things to people. We have to acknowledge feelings before we problem solve, but acknowledge them properly, acknowledge other people's feelings. You know, I need you to know that I am hurt. I'm not sure, I need to share this with you. It could be you're also hurt. Acknowledge the other person's feelings. Let's try and work this out. Let's understand what each of us are feeling and why we're feeling that way. We need to take time before we speak up to understand why we feel what we're feeling and go into a conversation where we do have that conversation. We have to have the feeling conversation. It's part of the conversation. We have to have it. But it's got to be done very carefully and in a very guided way. In other words, when it comes to feelings, we can't vent. You could vent, but not to the person you're having the conversation with. To vent to someone else maybe, but sometimes venting is a good thing, but not when you're trying to resolve an issue. You're trying to have a conversation to resolve a conflict, venting normally is destructive. It's got to be a structured, guided conversation, but one that includes feelings. Because feelings is a very, very important part of who we are. It's part of the makeup of who we are. And therefore, every conflict conversation, we have to be able to deal with those feelings as well. And finally, there's the identity conversation. And that's the problem where the situation threatens our identity. What does that mean? You see, when you go into a conversation, the comment you made before of "I'm always right," otherwise I wouldn't say that. Right? So it's a great comment. It's a great comment. I love it. Where does that come from? People go into conversations or go into situations where they have a certain identity, perception of themselves. Right? They also have a certain assumption of what shapes that identity. And we've talked about this a lot when we spoke about self-esteem, right? People attribute their success or their achievements or their competency to defining who they are. So therefore, a person who wants to be confident walks into a conversation thinking, well, I'm competent. I'm a competent person. Therefore, if I agree with you, that means I'm doubting my own competency. So what do you mean? I'm right. I'm always right because I'm a competent individual. Or I'm incompetent. So those are the people also can't have normal conversations. Those are the people that have the opposite conversations. Conversation is, yeah, you're right. Just whatever you say, you're right, you're right. I'm sorry, you're right. Right? That's not a very effective conversation either. Conversation is where two people converse with each other, people communicate with each other. So a person goes with an assumption, I'm good or bad, I'm lovable, unlovable. There's no in between, right? So therefore, the goal of the conversation becomes, I'm going to protect my image or nothing. It's all or nothing. So either I'm going to go in there absolutely stubborn, and I'll not budge one inch because I am having the conversation on a different level. I'm having the conversation understanding or erroneously assuming that the conversation shapes my identity, and therefore I need to protect my identity. Because I think if I agree with you, or I give in, or I compromise, or we come up with a different solution that's different to the way I thought in the beginning, or we come up with a creative way of doing things which wasn't what I thought, then I'm damaging my own identity. Or you go in the conversation, you just agree to everything, you become a doormat, and just because you couldn't care about your own identity. Right? But of course, that's ridiculous. Because a learning conversation needs to be based on the fact, look, none of us are perfect. Each of us is a complex person. What we do and what we succeed or don't succeed at will not necessarily define who we are. And therefore we need to go, and the goal becomes, let's understand the identity issues for both of us. Maybe understand that, yes, we are threatened, but understand that that's an error. We need to build a better balance of our own self-image. We need to understand that agreeing or not agreeing is not going to shape who we are. And let's try and get rid of that identity crisis with the conversation so that we focus more on the issue rather than the shaping of our identity. So that's just a little bit of, I know it's very brief, but that's just a little bit of how we have a conversation when it's a conflict situation. So again, it's the understanding that there's three conversations going on. First of all, going back to the strategies of last week and 2 weeks ago, where we need to give ourselves the break, we need to have humility, we need to not let our ego get in the way. The goal of a conversation is to connect to the other person, not to signal send. And therefore, how that translates into a conflict situation is to understand, first of all, the most important thing to understand is that first, what happened in the conversation. Understanding we don't know the background, we don't know the intention, we don't know who there is to blame, we both contribute. It's a whole different goal, a whole different conversation. We need to understand that feelings are a part of what happened, and if we need to know how to manage the feelings in the conversation. Understand, we need to understand them ourselves, we have to understand the other person has feelings and try to bring that in with respect. And the third is understand that the conversation or what we do or don't do doesn't shape our identity. We need to be aware of that it is threatening us, be aware that the other person also has an identity that might be threatened, and try and get beyond that to have a respectful conversation. With those things in mind, they're all difficult, but the more thought we give them. By the way, these slides, if you want, I can email them to you, so if that helps, please let me know, and I'll... Yeah, just if you don't mind, just tell Michal on the way out, and I'll make sure that we email it to you. And next week we're going to talk about a different type of conversation. We're going to talk about the conversation that is not conflict, but is just a difficult conversation to have, and how we approach that. Have a great week. And if you haven't bought a raffle ticket yet, please. We're climbing slowly, getting there, but help us out. No, not a few weeks still. No, after Shavuot. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I just realized I'm going to be away next week, but that's okay because Michal sends me.
I do the things, yeah.
And I will ask for those slides. They're brilliant. Now, I can't remember if